Bonus. Something extra that is good. B-O-N-U-S. Bonus.
Welcome in, everyone. It's another bonus episode of Two Peas on a Podcast. Only one of the peas is here because Andy is just, he's so busy talking to God and doing everything else that he can't do these bonus episodes. So I'm left to do it. We're in the midst of our 1980s themed bonus episodes. We're doing one every month in the first half of 2018, and we are up to a very special one that I'm super excited about. I brought along some friends of mine and some great podcasters in their own right to join me to discuss what we are covering today, which is the 1980s, the best rock albums from that decade. Rock is a very loose term, but I'm going to leave it at rock, and I'm going to see what these guys come up with. I could have said heavy metal. I toyed around with doing hair band, but all that stuff falls into the rock category, so we'll see what these guys come up with, myself included. Let's go around the horn here and introduce everyone. I'm going to start, and I'm going to introduce them in the order that they're going to be giving their list today, which I didn't tell these guys, so I guess they're finding that out for the first time. But he's part of the Podfix Network. I love this guy. Great podcast in his own right called Gravity Beard. If you guys aren't listening, you need to. We'll be talking about his show a little bit later on as well. His name is Chris, but he goes by the Toph, and we have two Chrises today, so I'm probably going to be calling him Toph. The Toph. What's up, brother, from Gravity Beard? Thanks for being here.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. I'm excited. I hope you enjoyed coming up with your rock list, headbanging there.
I absolutely did. I'm looking forward to it.
I listened to some of your 90s episodes, so I know if it was 90s, you would definitely be.
I'd be all over it. No, I can do. I'm looking forward to doing 80s. You and I are the similar ages, so
yeah, true.
I'm happy to and looking forward to doing the 80s as well.
And we did playlist together with Josh, and that's music sure podcast, did. So that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Still hasn't aired. I feel like we recorded that when I was in college. I don't know why Josh doesn't put that out yet. But and then let's say hey to Mark from the Poop Culture Podcast, one of my favorite podcasts to name, to speak out loud. But Mark, what's up, brother? First time on Two Peas. How you doing, man?
Oh, good. Thank you for having me. Not your favorite podcast to listen to, just going on name base. I appreciate it. No, thanks for the invite. This is right up my alley. I'm actually, you know, much like most podcasters, I'm an ex-radio DJ who decided to just get into the medium.
Yeah.
And you can check us out over on poopculture.com with my co-host, Mr. Rick Mancrush and Shawbag 6. Yeah, it's kind of an irreverent improv, we like to call it.
You know, it's a fun show. I like the Poop Culture, man. It's a fun show. And then this guy's got nothing going on except weekends at Home Depot and, what did you say, Bed Bath & Beyond? He's been on the show before, however. Frequent collaborator and guest host and avid listener. I love this guy. We go back way back, not to the 80s, but we do go back to the 90s. We met, I believe, in like 94. Been friends for a long time. Mr. Chris Wiz is back on the show. Wiz, what's up, brother?
What's going on, Gerald? How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. Last time, you always come on to talk music, which is good. You did, what did we do? We did 90s rock and we did 90s hip hop.
90s rock.
And 90s, yep. And 90s hip hop, yeah.
We're just taking it back a decade. We're going to do some 80s rock.
Yeah, we're doing it back, man. We're doing it back. So that's the panel today, guys, for the best albums from the 1980s in the genre of rock and roll. So getting us started off with our number five, we're going to give you our top fives. We're going to compare a list. We're going to go down here and see what heavy metal stuff we were headbanging to. So I'm going to let the Toph kick us off. Chris, what is your number five rock album from the 1980s, buddy?
Okay, let's do it. My number five selection is an American rock band from New York City. They formed in 1984, so halfway through the decade. Stylistically, the band's music, kind of a creative fusion, influenced by heavy metal, funk, jazz, hip-hop, country, and alternative rock. Their lyrics can range from the personal to the political. This album is certainly an example of that. Mm-hmm. In some of the latter cases, even attacking Eurocentricism, which I know is a big issue for all of us, and of course, I wasn't like kidding, but and actually they tackled a little bit of racism too, which is current, unfortunately. But my number five pick is Vivid by Living Color.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
We'll be right back. good choice, man. Good choice.
Album.
Yeah, good one, man. I mean, Cult of Personality obviously is the big hit, right?
That's certainly the most well-known track. Glamour Boys is a really cool fusion song, actually, fusing a number of different styles, and that was on that album as well. And there's a couple other lesser-known tracks, but, you know, top to bottom, really good album, especially those two tracks.
Can I ask you though, what happened to him after that album?
that's a great question, which I didn't dig that deeply into it. However,
I'm just curious. We do
Where Are They Now on our show, so that maybe that's something we'll dig into.
Yeah, just curious because you're right. That was such a great album, and then it was just like they kind of disappeared. But good pick there, man. Nice way to get us started off. Wiz, you into that?
I am. The only thing that I have against that album and that just band in general is that as a fat kid growing up in the 80s, trying to fit into a body glove swimsuit was horrible. Sure. So on that, I've got to take it down a couple notches just because of the embarrassment that I had to go through with the moose knuckles and everything on the body glove suits.
I thought maybe you're gonna make a reference and act like you were confused between them and Milli Vanilli. which I know the guys from Living Color really enjoyed that comparison back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I always get my black guys with dreads mixed up.
We'll see if Milli Vanilli makes anyone's list today. I don't know if that fits in the
That's
brief,
an incredibly white thing to say, and I appreciate that.
Well, yeah, you're welcome.
All right, so nice way to get us started off there, man. So Mark from Poop Culture, you are up, brother, for your number five. What did you come up with?
Now, if we're going personal favorites on this, I had such a hard time because, as I found out, most of my favorite albums as a whole came out in either 1979 or 1990. Mm. So I really missed it by a few months on either end.
So you had a bit of a dark period.
I did. Some of my favorite bands came out with some monumental albums during the 1980s. So for my number five pick, it's actually one of my favorite albums of all time. That was the Talking Heads with their live album, Stop Making Sense. I don't know if you guys have heard this one, but it is the pinnacle Talking Heads album, all done live, and there's actually been a re-release since with added extra new tracks, but it's got probably the best version of Psycho Killer out there. Favorites, Life During Wartime, and Swamp.
Okay. So is it a concert album? It's a live album?
It is a live album.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, there's some Talking Head tunes that I personally, like, I hear them and they're just, you know, infamous. But I never got into the Talking Heads in the 80s. I don't know why, because anytime I hear one of their songs, I love them. But as a band, I wasn't, like, following them in the 80s.
That's how I was for many, many years, hearing the casual Talking Heads song.
Right.
Until I stumbled upon the live album and heard the live performances.
Okay.
And since then, it's been in constant rotation in my player for the last 20 years.
Wiz, man, we're back together again, brother. And I'm excited to see, because this is before we met. You know, we met in 94 and have been friends ever since. I send your payment every month to continue to be a friend of mine. And I hope you're still getting those checks. Well, what did you decide to put down as your number five 80s rock album?
Well, number five was vacillating between a couple ones, but I took the pussy pill and I went with U2's Joshua Tree as my number five. It's one of those that I can go back to, and I don't know if you guys did, but I listened to a lot of different 80s rock stuff, and some of it I was just aghast that I even had that album. But this one I could go back to with, Where the Streets Have No Names, still haven't found what I'm looking for. Obviously the classic kind of ballad, With or Without You. Mm-hmm. And then some upbeat rock songs like Bullet and Blue Sky and things like that. But really, that was, I'd listened to October and Boy and some of the other stuff beforehand, but this album really put them on the map. I think that's where kind of the torch went to them being the number one rock band of kind of that era, that the 85 to 90, they were probably the biggest thing out there. Mm-hmm. In that kind of that adult contemporary rock kind of thing. So that was my number five, reluctantly, but I think it's deserved. And I wait without you, with or without you, with or without you. Through the storm we reach the shore, you give it all but I want more.
Yeah, it's a classic album. I don't know who's heard it and who hasn't, because it's just on our Patreon right now, but we discussed the love ballads of the 1980s, and you two came up from someone's list on there, and I brought it up on that show, but I was going to ask you guys, just because I'm just curious, this came up on that show, and then I kind of became curious about it, but I feel like U2 is literally, like, just such a huge band, and I just don't know why I've never cared about U2. Like,
I heard your disdain on that episode. That actually put it over the edge for me.
That's what gave you that. Yeah, you probably should have picked it.
Like, fuck Gerald. But, let's do this.
I mean, Mark or Chris, either one of you guys have any? I mean, do you guys like U2 or what am I missing here? Because I just feel like
So I've got a lot to say about this. So I didn't know I didn't know how hardline we were going to stick to the definition of rock.
Yeah.
Joshua Tree ended up being an honorable mention because I wanted to stick to a harder definition of rock.
Okay.
But Joshua Tree, you know, last year they toured the 30th anniversary of this album. It was number three on Rolling Stone's best albums of all time, the top 100 best albums of all time.
Of all time, brother? Are you serious?
Of all time. Well, there's yes, it was.
Okay.
And to the Wiz's credit, this did, you know, they got plenty of attention on a couple of their earlier albums. You know, War and Boy got plenty of attention. And I almost, this was a defining album for this time.
Yeah.
And it's loaded with hits. It almost feels like a U2 greatest hits album from that era.
Yeah.
You know, because almost every song on the album is good.
I can see
that. For me, and just like you said, there's certainly bands where I just missed them. I just didn't get into
them,
but it was not one of those. And I was into U2 big time during this time. And then when Octoon Baby came out, I was like, I don't really like that departure, because that was right after Rattle and Hum, which was a great live album. Then they kind of took a downward spiral. If you were a big U2 fan, by the time they got past Octoon Baby, you were getting frustrated with this band.
Okay.
But Lemon or something like that?
Yeah, yes. Maybe, or like Pop, but you know, the Pop album came out for a while. And so if you were a true diehard U2 fan, you were not happy about those.
Yeah.
But you can't argue that U2 is not one of the biggest bands of all time.
No,
almost. No. I don't want to speak sacrilege, but they're almost like Who or Zeppelin or Rolling Stones type big. They're one of the biggest bands of all time.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
This is their seminal album.
And I agree with you. And that's what I'm saying, is that I feel like that is a true statement, where you could easily put them in the top 5 or 10 like rock bands ever. But for some reason, I'm just like, I just fucking missed it. You know what I mean? There are some songs that I love. With or Without You is one. And that song One from Act Tongue Baby I love. And Desire from Rattle and Hum. Like, there's a lot of songs of theirs that I could listen to every week and enjoy it. But I don't know. I just feel like I missed the bus there. But hey.
Well, if we were going off a looser definition, this probably would have been my number one album.
Hey, look at there. Okay. Well, Chris, you got a fan, brother.
I can back you up on the U2 pick. I am a U2 fan.
Cool.
And I laugh when you say about the time that you got lost from U2 was during the Pop time and Octong Baby and after that era. That's absolutely where I got lost.
Well, listen, guys. Okay, so we've got? We got Living Color, Talking Heads, and U2 so far. So here I fucking come out of left field.
Mariah Carey.
Wow. But wow. Mine is definitely the headbanger of the group thus far, at least. Kind of like what Toaf said, I won't say that I stuck to heavy metal, but it turns out that I would say 4 out of 5 of mine would probably fall in that category. But it wasn't on purpose, and you'll hear when I give my honorable mentions, there were a lot in the mix there from different kind of genres of rock, if you will. But my number five is an album that, and this kind of is what defined my list, is at the time. So how it affected me when it came out, when I was a teenager, when I was young, and when I was hearing these for the first time. You know, back then was really cassette tapes, and then in the late 80s was CDs. You know, just the memories I have of how they impacted me in the beginning, And because of that, if you listen to it in today's era, some of these, not all of them, but they just don't really, quote, stand the test of time in terms of if they were produced this year. But because of the memories I have of them, when I hear them, those just all kind of get triggered on. They remain some of my favorite albums of all time. So to start with that kind of definition, my number five is from, if you want to say heavy metal, they would probably be considered the best, if not one of the probably top three on almost everyone's list, is Metallica. And the album I chose is Master of Puppets from 1986. That's
pick.
That's my number five rock album. You know, when this came out, I was like 12 years old. And I mean, I just felt, I almost felt like I was doing something wrong by listening to it. Like it was a little too much and it was a little too taboo. And it was just so hard and so raw. And the lyrics I didn't understand. I really still don't, to be honest with you. You know, some 30 years later, but it was just such a hard album, and it was just so different from anything that, you know, my parents were listening to or my friends in school were listening to, and I knew it was rock, but it was just like, wow, somebody just fucking, you know, kicked it up a notch, and those guys just really, you know, they just really brought the pain. And I later got turned on to albums that came before this, like Kill 'Em All. And I'm not sure if Ride the Lightning came out before Master Puzz. I'm sorry, but it did. So
Ride
I got
the Lightning is my favorite Metallica album by far. I thought it was a little more melodic than some of the other ones, and with that heavy style, it was a breath of fresh air at the time.
You know, but like I said, Master of Puppets is what introduced them to me, and then I got turned on to some of their stuff after that. So because of the attachment I have to it and the memories I have to it, it's my favorite Metallica album to this day, because it's what introduced me to that kind of hard edge, really heavy metal music. And that's my number five, guys, Master of Puppets.
Great pick. Great
Good pick.
Thanks, guys. So that wraps us back around to Toph. He gave us Living Color to start us off, and now it's up for your number four, buddy.
Yep, my number four, we've already talked about him. It was my number four pick is the third studio album by U2, and that was War. We don't have to get into it too deeply because we already talked about it, but I will say this. It was a commercial success. It was critically maligned at first, but then they warmed up to it. It was probably the most political album they'd come out with up until that point. And an interesting point is that it knocked off Michael Jackson's Thriller from the top of the charts and became the band's first number one album in the UK, reaching number 12 in the US. Okay. So it was very popular. And going back to the Rolling Stone list, it was number 40 for the best albums of all time.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we've already kind of talked about U2. I personally don't get it, but I will admit that I definitely see their cultural impact. And if I saw somebody's, like you said, the Rolling Stones list, if I see that, I'm not going to be shocked by it. I'm going to be like, okay, that makes sense. I get it. I just personally, I wasn't buying a lot of their stuff back really ever. So
yeah, I hear you.
You know, but I completely understand. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of people to refute it. So there you go. Number four for you is War by U2. I like it. So Mark James, what do you got for your number four, buddy?
All right. For my number four, I'm going to go with a band that was formed in New York City in 1973, but their roots go back even further when they were a band called Wicked Lester. But they did release a brand new album that was a pinnacle turning point for the band in 1983, and that was Kiss with the release of Lick It Up, which was the first album that they ever came out with where they had taken the makeup off and revamped the lineup, featuring Vinnie Vincent on guitar and lead guitar on one of the tracks. Rick Derringer came in the studio to lay some tracks down on Exciter.
Okay.
But I went with albums that I still listen to this day from that time period, and Kiss's Lick It Up album has been one of my favorites for a very long time. Big fan of Creatures of the Night, which was the album before this as well. but I had to pick one or the other. I went with Lick It Up. It was a little more of a commercial success, had a few bigger hits, and I think there's some really good deep cuts laid on the backside of the album as well.
I think I'll let the other guys comment if they'd like on Kiss, but I think Kiss happened too early for me. I think that's my problem with Kiss. Like, I like a lot of their hits that, you know, that are kind of like synonymous, like Rock and Roll All Night and Detroit Rock City and that kind of thing, but like, in fact, looking at my list, I didn't even realize this till right now, but Master of Puppets, well, no, I take that back. There's one that's older. But all of my albums are in the second half of the decade, and I didn't do that on purpose. So I feel like a lot of it has to do with the fact that I was 12, 13, 14, right, and I was really starting to kind of care about music.
I find that with a lot of people that aren't into Kiss. Kiss is one of those bands where you have to get on the boat early,
yeah,
to appreciate it. The first two bands I ever discovered, oddly enough, are similar, but you'd never pair the two together, and that would have been Kiss and the Beatles.
Okay. Okay.
If you musically, Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley formatted Kiss after the Beatles musically. Their songs are simple with hooks and they're all about girls, but Kiss just did it a little crazy. They cranked it up to 11 a little bit.
Yeah, put on that makeup, huh? Okay. Yeah. That's cool. Hey, man. Cool. Hey, cool pick. I got no problem with it. I love Kiss. I just, like I said, I feel like I wasn't old enough to really be into them until it had kind of happened already. Cause I feel like they, like you said, they kind of started in the 70s and then, you know, worked their way through the decade,
right,
of the
and
80s.
By the time Lick It Up was released and they revamped their sound and lineup, and with Vinnie Vincent on guitar, it was more, there was a lot of shredding going on. If you weren't into the Kiss quote unquote sound,
yeah,
and image, you weren't going to buy into it at that point.
Well, my biggest memory of Kiss, cause I was too young to really fully appreciate all that was Kiss. So my most vivid memory is when Gene Simmons appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and she asked him, how long is your tongue? And he said, long enough to be your best friend.
Yes. that's Gene.
That's my favorite Gene Simmons Kiss.
That's Gene.
Yeah. But then I actually, nothing against actual Kiss, but I actually prefer Mini Kiss.
Oh, okay. Mini Kiss.
Mini Kiss.
Which is the midget tribute band to Kiss.
Hey, don't worry, Gene Simmons is suing each and every one of them. They won't be around much longer.
But he's only suing them for half as much.
Oh, there it is. Well done.
Well played, sir.
Well done.
I see what you did there, and I like it.
Well done. Well done. All right, Wiz, you're up, right? What's your number four, buddy?
My number four, I went from U2. Number four was a 1988 album. I heard Mountain Song for the first time, mm-hmm, and I thought it was absolutely, it blew me away. It was raw. It was just crazy sound. This guy, Perry Farrell, was singing his heart out. It mm-hmm sounded like a live album, but it was recorded, you know, it was in the studio, but Nothing Shocking from 1988 is my number four. Also, it didn't hurt that the cover had boobies on it.
Yeah, Jane's
so
Addiction.
As a 12-year-old, 13-year-old kid, that cover, you said you felt dirty listening to Metallica. I felt dirty just looking at the cover of Jane's Addiction. And that was that turned me on to it. But that whole album is, I listened to it the other day on the treadmill, and it is as raw as it was then, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's on my honorable mentions. You didn't mention the band, by the way, but it's Jane's Addiction.
I apologize. I thought everybody would know. No.
Needs no introduction, though. Needs no introduction. But yeah, that's a good one. It's on my honorable mentions. So Jane Says remains one of the best kind of like rock ballads, especially to come out of the 80s.
And their follow-up project, Porno for Pyros, wasn't terrible either.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I agree.
And yeah. I think you can credit Perry Farrell for Lollapalooza, can't you?
I think so. It's basically the creator.
I got to see them for the first Lollapalooza when they came around to Raleigh, North Carolina, and all the bands that I list actually I've seen live. So that's kind of maybe endears the each album to me. But that was a crazy show. I was 16 years old, and in a world that was different from anything else. That whole scene was great.
That's cool, man. No, great pick. Like I said, it's on my honorable mentions. Okay, guys, so my number four, if you guys are ready. Now, this is weird because this is it's definitely the only band on my list, including honorable mentions, that I only liked in the 80s. And then after the 80s, I don't care about them anymore. I don't know why. They had two, maybe three albums that came out in the 80s that I, like, loved all of them. and I had a connection with my folks. My parents loved this band, and it was one of the very, very, very first bands that would be considered kind of like hard rock at the time that I can remember being into, which I always thought was really cool that my parents would introduce me to something like that. You know, you hear stories about your parents not letting you watch MTV and not listen to crazy music, and my parents are here introducing me to this kind of stuff. So I was only 10 years old when this album was out, but it is actually was released in 1984, and I'm talking about 1984 by Van Halen. That is my
was actually my number one album.
Oh, that's sure just gonna be your number one. Okay, well
that is my number one. Hang tight, Van Halen, 1984.
Hang tight on your commentary then, because I'll let you talk a little bit about it when it comes around to you then. But we have a little crossover there.
No, feel free,
which is great. But for but for me, you know, like I said, I mean, really, it's just about the fact that that's when I was really, that was the conduit for me to what would be considered hard rock. I mean, Eddie Van Halen, I mean, forget about it. From a guitarist standpoint, I mean, who's better? You know, very few, if any. Hot for Teacher, you got on there. You had Jump, which was obviously one of their most commercially successful tunes. My personal favorite is Panama, you can find on that album. Just the cover alone with the baby with the angel wings smoking the cigs, and it's just an iconic image from the album cover, probably one of the best album covers also to come out of the 80s. And it was also, and most notably, it was the last David Lee Roth helmed Van Halen album. And I did like some of the Sammy Hagar stuff. I thought 5150 was a great album, but I'm more of a David Lee Roth Van Halen guy. So 1984 is my number four, guys, and it sounds like Mark's in agreement. Well, how do you guys feel the Chris's? You guys into that?
Well, we all know your love of the samurai sword, so that just goes right in with David Lee Roth.
Yeah, of course.
Now, I think you and I are the same age, so yeah, that was right in our wheelhouse of just that rock. It was there was some a little bit of pop to it, but that shredding on the guitar was just phenomenal. So yeah, I can't disagree with that album at all.
Awesome. All right, man. So we're moving right along. We're getting into our top threes now. So number three, we're going to send it over to Toe from Gravity Beer. What do you got, buddy?
Okay, so I'm actually going to change my list on the fly.
Wow.
Are we allowed to do that? Is that too dangerous?
Hey, it's your list. It's got to stand alone on its own. I'm going to throw this up on Twitter and see who had the best list. So if you want to change it, I'm all about flexibility, brother. Go for it.
Okay. Well then I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna pull an audible right in the middle. Is this number four? Is number three?
That's your number. It's your number three. Do you want to make it your number four and then change your number four as well?
Just make your own damn list, okay?
No, I'm gonna say that my number three is the Beastie Boys' License to Ill.
Okay.
That was my number three. You grabbed it one slot above me.
Oh, it's yours. It's on yours as well.
It's like a draft.
Okay. Yeah, it was my next pick and you stole it.
Well, you could still pick it, but let me just say something real quick. Wiz and I don't know who heard the episode and who didn't, but we did 90s rock albums and we did 90s hip hop albums together with some other guests, but he was on both of those. And an argument came up that I'll let you guys go ahead and talk about, especially you, Tove, because you just picked it. And Mark, it sounds like it's on your list as well. This is hip hop to me. This is rap to me. I love the Beastie Boys, and Wiz will tell you, they've always been one of my favorite bands. We saw them live. I love them. Love them. Own all their stuff. But if I had to pick between hip hop and rock, I'm putting them in hip hop. Now you guys go ahead. Go ahead, Tove.
Okay. Let me take a shot at it. Mark, feel free to jump in however you see fit.
I have some ammunition to add to this. So you go ahead.
Excellent. I'll make a very simple argument, and then you're probably smarter than me, so you can elaborate quite a bit more. So I don't have a problem if you want to put them in hip hop, but I also don't have a problem if somebody wants to put them into rock, because these guys were immensely talented when it came to playing instruments. That's not all that common in hip hop. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go see the Beastie Boys, and if we were talking about the 90s, then we would talk about their performance in 1994, where they blew everything away and made the Smashing Pumpkins look small, which was really hard to do back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they play their own instruments and they're really good at it. They're mm-hmm. they're incredibly talented, and so that's why I don't have a problem, especially with some of the tracks on here. And it is fusion. It's absolutely a fusion between hip hop and rock music. But you know, No Sleep Till Brooklyn, Fight for Your Right, those Brass Monkey, those were hip hop, but they were also rock songs.
Yeah, no, I feel it.
Heavy guitar and all the rock elements.
No, I feel it. I guess what, before Mark chimes in, because it's his next pick as well, but I guess what I'm saying is I agree with you. I'm just saying I'm giving more of an explanation as to why I didn't put it on this list, whereas if we were doing a hip hop list, I would have. I guess I'm boxing it in to where I'm like, I have to pick one kind of thing. You know what I mean?
I hear you. I think they're really, they genre jump as much as any group does out there. They're a little bit like Beck, where they can kind of do whatever they want and they get away with it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They're not quite as versatile as Beck, because he literally does, you know, whatever he wants, but they can get away with it, and they do, because if you listen to they haven't released anything recently because one of them died, but a few, they did an all instrumental album, and I can't remember what the name of it was. It was all over the spectrum of styles.
Yeah, no, I remember that as well. I'll let Mark go ahead since that's on his list as well. Real quick though, Toph, what's your favorite tune off of License to Ill? If you had to pick one.
It's got to be No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
No!
No Sleep Till Brooklyn was good. You know what? Mine has always been Girls, and then I was listening to it the other day, and I'm like, that doesn't really fit in today's society. I think I should pick a new favorite, because this is literally talking about how he's got girls doing all his housework. So I don't know.
It's Harvey Weinstein's favorite song.
It's
well.
His theme song. Well,
especially if
you're
talking about rock.
Oh God. But I did love Girls. Still do. But it came on my Amazon Music the other day, and I'm like, wait a second. Mark, go ahead, man, because you said it's your number three too, right? License to Ill?
Absolutely, 100%. License to Ill, one of the first albums that I had completely memorized front to back.
Yep.
I can't remember any other album
going
back. I think I was probably 6, 7, 8 years old, and I had this album completely memorized.
Mark, what's your ammunition to make the point that they should be on the rock list?
Well, let's see. Are you guys familiar with a band named Led Zeppelin?
Mm-hmm.
Or yes. AC/DC? Or Stevie Wonder? Or Black Sabbath? The Clash? These are all bands that populate that album, because almost the entire album was sampled from other fantastic rock songs. Listening to License to Ill is essentially like listening to Led Zeppelin's greatest hits, because you have Rhyming and Stealing, which uses When the Levee Breaks, and The Ocean is in She's Crafty, Good Times, Bad Times is No Sleep Till Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Much like Dr. Dre, years later, remixed Parliament Funkadelic's greatest hits into his album, The Chronic. Beastie Boys did this concept first. That's why everything fits cohesively as an album, because it all comes from the same source material.
Great album. Great album. I feel left out that I didn't put it on my top five now, but I don't know. I feel like I said, I feel like if I had to pick, and I know what you guys are saying about genre jumping, so... If we were doing, let me put it to you this way, and then I'll leave it alone. If we were doing a top five albums of the 80s, it would probably be like my number one or two. Just albums,
absolutely.
Period. I just,
I'd,
I don't
like
know.
To thank, I'd like to thank Mark for articulating my position much better than I did.
You guys bounce off each other.
I knew where you were going.
Thank you, sir.
All right. So, Wizzy, what do you got, man? Number three.
Yeah. That is, I am anticlimactic after this, that License to Ill, a diatribe. So I'm going to go, I went again, took another pussy pill and went with REM's Life Rich Pageant from 1986.
Okay.
I had to throw something REM in there.
Yeah.
Banjo solo on I Believe is just, it's headbanging. It's wonderful. But overall, this was my actually first introduction to them. I was 10, 11 years old when that came out. So it was, it turned me, and we talked about, you know, best rock albums, but also favorite rock albums. This one kind of got me into that a little bit more of the alternative, from, you know, from Atlanta, or from Athens, from Georgia, some of that Southern alternative. alternative rock. So this was the my first introduction to it. I went back, listened to some of the earlier albums. And then from that 86 to about 90, 91, it was really solid stuff. Kind of departed and then came back a little bit. But REM is by far probably top five bands in on my list. Okay. And this was, to me, an introduction and a great album.
Okay.
And all right, before anybody says anything else, I want to thank Chris for representing the beta males that are listening to the program.
Anyone from Athens, Georgia tuned in is extremely excited right now. Listen,
but I will also say, Chris, that REM is one of my favorite bands of all time. And I just didn't include it in this conversation because I was sticking to a more strict definition, but they're terrific.
Well, thank you. Like, I after hearing everybody, and you know, we're going to Metallica, and I'm like, oh, I've got REM at number three.
Joshua Tree.
Yeah. I'm not doing well. Number two is gonna get you guys.
Yeah.
Number two is the Smiths, isn't it?
It's the Smiths. You're close.
Culture Club? It's not culture. It's not culture club.
I'm waiting for him to pull out that secret Morrissey pick.
No, this is who Morrissey wanted to be. Is number two.
So life's rich pageant over document. How was?
Yeah, document. I really like it. Again, for me, it was just that was my introduction to REM. That's album cool. Right there, or yeah. It was a tape actually. I got from a friend, and that's why it was just a personal thing for me.
That's cool. All right. Well, listen, Wiz and definitely Topher are going to know this. Mark, I'm not sure how far back you've listened on my show before, but I know the two Chris's are not going to be shocked in any way by this. However, this is a fanboy pick for my number three. So in 1989, this became my favorite band. 1989, 1990 became my favorite band. Luckily for me, for our discussion today, this album was released in the summer of 89, so it fits the brief. I have not looked back ever since. They have remained my favorite band for whatever the math is on that, almost 30 years. It is Bleach by Nirvana. Officially, their debut album is my number three rock album of the 80s. Like I said, it came out in 1989 and introduced to me what would become and remain my favorite band of all time. Toph or Wiz, are either of you surprised by that?
I'm not at all surprised because your love for Nirvana is well documented and it's well justified. I didn't remember that Bleach came out in 89, so that's interesting that they came in just under the buzzer.
Yeah. It was, Love Buzz was the first single off that album. They actually released it as a single. Sub Pop did in 88. And it was it later ended up on the album Bleach, but you got Paper Cuts on there, Floyd the Barber, which is a kind of demented story from based on the Andy Griffith Show. That's the kind of guy Kurt Cobain was in his mid-20s, but
I think I've actually heard this album, believe it or not.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
I'm not
because
shocked by...
I'm sorry, Mark. I was going to say, and I'll let you guys chime in for sure, but I was going to say it's amazing to me because, you know, imagine if it's y'all's favorite band. So whoever your favorite band is, imagine having a window into seeing them play in the garage before they broke big. That's what Bleach is. I mean, Bleach literally sounds like somebody recorded them playing in the garage. It's very raw. They don't take out the feedback that they get from their guitars. They're all in there. It's almost like you went to see them in concert and you were the only person there, if that makes sense.
Now, was this album recorded with Dave Grohl or with Chad Channing?
No, it's Chad Channing. Dave Grohl didn't come on until Nevermind.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So the drumming is inferior. But go ahead, Mark.
No, I'm not shocked by this pick whatsoever. 1989 is when Bleach came out, so you gotta kind of classify it still as an 80s album, technically.
Right.
But I think it was Nirvana's best album. That's okay. My hot take on all this. It's my favorite Nirvana album by far.
That's awesome, man. I'm not gonna explain why.
Big fan of School, big fan of Floyd the Barber, and you know, like it was just discussed, the more stripped down raw feel, I felt the more Nirvana got quote unquote produced, the worse the band became. It was the raw power, energy, and emotion that made that band special. When you start tinkering with that formula and commercializing it, that was eventually the downfall of it. And I think that was probably the downfall of Kurt as well. That was what troubled him the most, was becoming a product and not a person.
You know, I love that you name Bleach as your favorite album. I've heard people say that before because of the raw quality and the not only is there a lack of overproduction, it doesn't sound like it's produced at all. It sounds like demo tapes. Of course, it's been remastered over the years and you can get great versions of it now. But, you know, I think Nevermind is going to probably remain their best album. I mean, that album just changed the landscape of rock, and Wiz and I have discussed that on previous episodes before, but you had everything, which is a lot of what we're talking about today, actually. You had everything pre-Nevermind, and then you've had everything post-Nevermind. Nevermind's almost like the little kind of indention in the timeline of rock and roll, in my opinion. So I appreciate you saying that, and I'm glad you guys are behind the pick there. So that moves us up. That moves us up to our runner-ups. We're doing our number two. So Toph, you get to go first, man, for your number two album, rock album of the 80s.
This will be an obvious pick by a couple of you probably. My number two was this band's debut studio album. It was released in the summer of 1987. It remains a seminal album from this time. It was number 27 on Rolling Stone's top 100 albums of all time, and that is Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses.
Absolutely. Had that on my list as well.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So top to bottom, it's got tons of great, memorable songs. They're all great grooves. You know, even though this is their debut studio album, you could almost say that when they toured this album, they were at their peak. I don't know if they, I mean, obviously they did for a few years, but I don't know that they'd put out better stuff than this.
Yeah, I mean, the Use Your Illusion was epic, but Appetite for Destruction is, I mean, that's where it started, man. It's going to come up later on my list, so I don't want to talk too much about it, so I can say something later.
Yep.
But I definitely agree with the pick. I'll just put it that way.
Right.
Cool. All right. So let's see. Mark, are you ready, man? You got your runner up there, your number two?
I am. And I'm going to go fanboy pick as well. And this is going to start some controversy, I have a feeling. You thought Kiss was an obscure pick. I absolutely love this album. And even though the 80s were a very dark period musically for this band, one of my all-time favorite bands, if not my all-time favorite band, released an album in 1987 entitled In the Dark, and that was The Grateful Dead.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
The only major hit off that album is the only major hit that the Dead ever had in the top 10. That was Touch of Grey. Other tracks such as Hell in a Bucket, West LA Fadeaway, and Tons of Steel are album standouts.
Are you a Deadhead? You consider yourself?
I absolutely am a Deadhead.
Cool, man.
I discovered the Dead probably in 95 or 96. So I got on the train very late.
Yeah.
But ever since then, I've been a Deadhead. Yeah. I got into the music, the sound, and I've worked my way through the entire catalog.
Yeah,
The Dark is one of those late 80s albums, one of the last Jerry Garcia albums that was done in the studio before his passing.
Mm-hmm.
And start to finish, I think it's a solid rock album, which typically you don't call The Grateful Dead a, a hardcore or harder rock band, but this has some more harder tempos for the from the dead that you've seen before.
Yeah, I'm not too intimate with their catalog, but I do know that album probably because of Touch of Grey, like you said. But
right,
I know that what's cool about the Dead though is no matter if you're a fan or not, it's just such a cultural like phenomenon, right? I mean, it's just like a whole world of people that just latch on to that music and to that band. It's just crazy. It's just crazy to me. But
and like I said, I've been a Deadhead, you know, since my teenage years, and finally this past summer got my first opportunity to see them in concert.
That's awesome, man.
And it was a life-changing experience. The only thing I can compare it to, in 1997, when I went to the Horde tour and saw Blues Traveler for the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, I felt like, you know, the 15-year-old girl that saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan show. It had that type of musical impact that, you know, I whipped my top off immediately.
And he screamed just like that.
I did.
Front row screaming just like that.
Nice. Awesome, man. Well, good pick. Grateful Dead,
hey,
obviously.
Hey, Gerald, iconic. If you're ready to move on, I want you to give me an opportunity to guess what Chris's next pick is.
Oh, you got you oh, know you gee. Know this. No, you gotta pick which one of them though.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm torn. It's in between In My Tribe or Blind Man's Zoo by 10,000 Maniacs.
Oh no, you're close.
Both solid. No, they're not.
So hard rock.
Oh come on, 10,000's great.
Go ahead, Wick. Go ahead, Wiz. he's taking shots at you. But what do you got, man?
I'm going to go, it was 1989, so it did squeak in, and this was a lot of big hair, so this could be a hair band.
Okay.
However,
Madonna.
No, close, but they're Flock from Europe.
Seagulls.
So they both have the same accent, Madonna and this band. But this is The Cure's Disintegration.
Oh, it's some honorable mentions. Yeah. It's some honorable mentions.
Okay. Now I feel better about my choice.
Can I tell you something? Can I tell you something real quick, Wiz?
Yeah, go ahead.
And I told my daughter this because we had a epic conversation actually on the way back from Greensboro once. It was an hour car ride for those of you that don't know. And it's so cool because she's my teenage daughter, and we just had a discussion about music. And what I realized on that car ride a couple years ago, I stand by it. I know you guys are gonna think I'm crazy. Wiz might not because he just picked it, but my favorite rock song ever, and I'm talking about personal favorite. Now, if I was making a list, critically acclaimed and all that, it would be different. But just my personal favorite rock song is "Fascination Street" from that album. Love it.
Interesting.
I love the riffs. I love the lyrics. Robert Smith's voice. Just it's such a haunting and like. It's like you're on a ride, brother. You know, it's like he's just taking you through a journey with him. And I just love Fascination Street. But go ahead. Give your spiel about Disintegration. It's on my honorable mentions.
Yeah, no, I mean, the same, like you said, I mean, I'd heard some earlier stuff from The Cure, but this album really from cover to cover was, I think it was produced a lot tighter than some of the other albums. So it was a little cleaner. And their sound, I think, excels in that clean, you know, that clean environment. And just going back to, you know, all the songs on there, I could listen to again. I have over the last week, just kind of getting ready for this list. But Fascination Street was on there. Love Song, obviously, is kind of a classic song. Pictures of You, you know, depending on what mood you're in, I mean, it could make you cry. I mean, it's the lyrics are great. And then you're talking about, you know, teenage daughters. I've got a teenage daughter myself, and we were watching 13 Reasons Why, and Fascination Street came on there, and I kind of popped up a little bit, and I told my daughter, I was like, hey, you've got to listen to this band. They've got some really good stuff out there, and she did, and she enjoyed it. So I think that album may be one of those that I'm not going to say under the radar, but could probably pass on to a lot of generations.
Yeah, like a lullaby with a fucking monster spider attacking a kid in his nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
The last. Yeah.
In full disclosure, I feel like it's only fair for me to admit that my, I mean, I absolutely love music, and from the early 80s all the way into probably the mid to late 90s, I listened to a ton of music. But in this conversation, you know, I stuck to the closer definition of rock, but my what I was listening to at the time was a lot closer to the stuff that you've been listening, Chris.
I can't be responsible for quite what goes in. All to keep
So right. I was huge into The Cure and U2, REM, and all that alternative stuff. It was called new wave music, or it was called alternative. Right. And I mean, I never saw them in concert, but I would love to. I mean, they're fantastic.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Go back and listen to their Unplugged. You can find it on YouTube.
Yeah,
And they broke it down even farther. They have like one of those play school pianos that they play on.
Oh wow!
It's really raw. It's really, really good. You should check that out.
Well, and just as an example, I know that I listed Appetite for Destruction, but when that album came out, Guns N' Roses was one of my best friend's favorite bands at the time, but I wasn't really listening to them. Instead, I was listening to NXS Kick, which came out at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that was just to tell you, just in full disclosure, just to tell you what I was really listening to at the time.
No, that's fine. Yeah, sure. All right. So my number two, guys, nice pick there, Chris. Like I said, it's on my honorable mentions. I love The Cure to this day. My number two is what would be considered kind of like 80s cheese, but again, I was trying to be authentic with my list of what was the most impressionable to me at the time when they came out. So this album is from 1987. I got a fun story about a particular song on this album, but it is from Def Leppard and it is called Hysteria. That's my number two album, rock album of the 1980s. My sister and I, so what was I? I was like 13 when this album came out. My sister was around eight. We used to basically wait up for them to play the Pour Some Sugar on Me video on MTV. It was back in the day when you could record stuff on VCR tape, you know? So we would wait up and wait for that video to come on so we could record it and on VCR, and then we eventually were able to do that. We were able to get it, and we had it on VCR tape, and we just loved that song. Her and I shared that song together. And it's a guilty pleasure type deal, don't get me wrong. I mean, they're not going to be considered one of the greatest rock bands, you know, of some of these that we're naming. But I just love that album when it came out. The title track, Hysteria. We talked about Pour Some Sugar on Me. Animal is on that record. Love Bites was a really kind of cheesy love ballad, rock, big hair ballad, if you will, from the 80s. But yeah, it was. But I just loved Hysteria when it came out, man. And it's still kind of a guilty pleasure if I hear any of those songs. And Wiz knows, but I DJ a lot of weddings. And Pour Some Sugar on Me is, to this day, one of the most popular songs at weddings. And people love dancing to it. So I still kind of get a little nostalgia when I hear that week after week, regardless of how often I hear it. So I had to put it on there, man, for the impact that it had on me back in the late 80s. But Def Leppard's Hysteria. I used to have a Def Leppard t-shirt that I got when I saw them on that tour, and it had so many damn holes in it that literally I was basically naked when I wore it. So I eventually got rid of it. But Def Leppard was impactful for me. So how do you guys feel about that pick?
I'll tell you, I liked Pyromania, and I really, really liked that. I think that can be three. And then obviously they took a break for a short period of time because either everybody died or lost an arm. And then when they came back, I guess I just did not get back on the train there, and so that was, it just wasn't one of my favorites from them. But I like some of the earlier stuff that they put out. But I mean, that's cool. I could definitely see. I mean, it was definitely poppy, and in 87, I think you said,
yeah,
that was all over the damn radio. So you know, there's definitely, you know, I probably had some good times to that song as well, or that album as well.
Yeah, cool. All right, guys.
I didn't listen to Def Leppard, but I enjoyed them as radio hits.
Yeah.
But you have to recognize Def Leppard's impact, because, I mean, what else would they play in strip clubs if it wasn't for Def Leppard?
Motley Crue. Motley Crue.
Yeah. Poison.
That's a good point. I guess they kind of led that charge. That's a good point.
I'm much like you, Chris. I got on, I enjoyed the early Def Leppard material, but, you know, after Rick Allen lost his arm and they went back in the studio, to me, it sounds like they overproduced the album to make up for his shortcomings, so to speak. And I really didn't enjoy their sound after that. It was too overproduced. And when you have the overproduction on top of the falsetto, you know, they were at that point, they were just much better live.
All right.
So, Gerald, what we're saying is you need to pick a number two.
I was going
to
say, I'd like to change my pick. No, I'm, I'm just kidding. All right. So, I knew it was a guilty pleasure, and I knew it was probably not going to be a super popular pick, but hey, I loved it. And I'm looking at all these albums, and I'm like, you know, this is probably the number two album that I listened to the most in the late 80s. So, there it is. There it is. Def Leppard. I wish I had my shirt. I could still wear it today, but I don't. So. All right, let's go. Let's do our number ones, guys. Let's get Chris the Toph over there to get us started with your number one, man. I'm excited. What was your number one 80s rock album?
Okay, so my number one was the seventh studio album by this American rock singer-songwriter legend. It came out just a week before my 10th birthday. It's not going to surprise anybody. It's Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen. I bought it on cassette. I wore it out. It kind of defined the time. It's probably one of his most popular albums. I know he's got a catalog of amazing things, but I can go back and listen to this album and enjoy it every single time, even today.
Yeah, I love the Boss, man. The Boss. I liked Glory Days. It's still one of my favorite songs. That was on that album, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite. Actually, that's probably my favorite Bruce Springsteen song. It's just so fun. And
You can't argue with The Boss. Over on the Poop Culture Podcast, a couple episodes back, we did an episode where we got to draft fantasy bands of musicians that we did one band of alive musicians and one that was dead. And Bruce Springsteen, I actually drafted as my singer.
Cool.
So surprisingly, in the dead category.
Yeah. No, he was in the live category with Paul McCartney on bass and then the dueling guitars of Steve Vai and Eddie Van Halen to back up.
Oh, wow. Eric Carr on drums, right?
No, I did not have Eric Carr on drums.
Okay. Good pick, man. I saw that in a lot of my research. I don't know. It was just a little too... I kind of missed the boat a little bit. I like the songs later in life. If you will, like Glory Days, Dancing in the Dark, obviously the title track. Big fan of Bruce, though, and great catalog. It's also a little poppy, that album, in my opinion. But hey, nobody's going to argue with The Boss, man.
Well, you know what? If you put it in the context of the time, it had a political message to it.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't think of it that way now. We just think of it as that was a really popular Springsteen album back in the day. But he was that was considered a bit of a rebellious album in the message that it had.
All right, Mark, what's your number one rock album of the 80s, buddy?
All right. My number one rock album of the 80s. If you thought the last one was poppy, this one could be considered poppy as well, but it is also one of the most badass rock albums with some of the badass shredding you'll hear anywhere. And that is the 1984 classic. It's not only one of the best 80s albums, it's one of the best albums of all time and one of the best soundtracks of all time. And that's 1984's Purple Rain by Prince.
Hey, nicely done. Nicely done.
You really cannot argue with that album. Start to finish, it is a musical masterpiece that current bands still look at for inspiration to this day.
Yep, I agree. Go ahead, guys. What do y'all want to say about it?
What was that music service that you subscribed to where you could get 15 albums for a penny?
Columbia House.
Oh, the Columbia House, yeah.
That's how I got Purple Rain on cassette. I think I paid 1 cent for it. It was worth every penny.
Absolutely.
I mean that was an amazing album. I don't even know what to say about it because he's incredible. I mean, he's incredible.
He is.
One of the best musicians and stage performers of all time.
Yeah.
Purple rain.
We talked about the Beastie Boys kind of transcending genres. Talk about that. How about Prince, huh? I mean, he's he's everywhere, bro. And he
he's in a category by himself. He's like who do you compare Michael Jackson to? Who do you compare Prince to? Like, there's not another Prince, right?
Exactly. No.
And
exactly.
The thing that people always forget about Prince is they got, much like Kiss, they got, you know, taken away by the imagery and that he portrayed to sell his music. And they forgot that he is a world-class musician. On his first albums, he wrote every song and played every instrument.
Yeah.
He was a composer.
Yeah.
Just so happens, rock and roll and pop music was his medium.
Well, and we didn't know until Dave Chappelle came along that he's actually also very good at basketball.
He's phenomenal. Yeah. Three-point shooter. Yep.
He's amazing at basketball.
Yep. That's true. Great pick, Mark. Love Prince. He's probably on the show before, but he's my favorite artist to come out of the 80s. Like, just his whole catalog combined, he's my favorite artist to come out of the 1980s. So, great pick, man. Obviously, I love it. Wiz, what's your number one, man? What's your number one 80s tune or 80s album?
I'm syncing up with Toph there. I've got Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction from 1987.
Nice.
That's my number one. I think, being in rock, being in heavy metal, it blew everybody away. I remember Sweet Child was the first song I heard off of that album on MTV, and it threw me into a tizzy. It was just so good. It was the lyrics were fun on some of the songs, and then they were sweet on some of the songs. There's most of the stuff I still don't understand. Who is Mr. Brownstone? What the hell is he doing? But there's and the imagery with Slash and the hat and the skulls on the cover art, just overall was it that defined that kind of that second half of the 80s for me when the rock. Kind of, glad that was a period in my life with some big hair and some heavy metal, but it was definitely awesome album.
Yep, I agree. Let me piggyback on you guys. Spoiler alert, my number one is Appetite for Destruction. So
fantastic album. You can't argue. It, not only was it one of the best 80s albums, that carried over and got so much radio play, it arguably could have been one of the best albums of the early 90s as well.
That's true. Yeah,
there were so many singles released off that one album. They played that to death, and for good reason.
Yeah. Wiz, we cross over on hip hop too? We both said the Chronic.
Yeah, the Chronic.
Yeah, so we cross over here on the number ones. We kind of have a lot of the same taste, but It's So Easy, You're Crazy, My Michelle. The opening riff and Welcome to the Jungle, that first minute or whatever, that just kind of builds up the climax to start that album. One of the greatest openings to an album, and Welcome to the Jungle. What are you going to do? I mean, it sets the tone for the whole album, and I can remember going to see them actually with Metallica. It was a double headlining tour in Columbia, South Carolina, and I got to see that show when I was young, and I was it just changed me forever as far as concert going is concerned. I can remember actually listening to this cassette tape on my yellow Walkman on the school bus. Again, I was 12 or 13 years old, and it was a big deal. I mean, it was right around that Master of Puppets time, like I talked about earlier. I think it came out maybe a year after that. So it was one of those albums that you just kind of, you're singing about drugs and sex, and here I am 13 years old. I don't understand any of it. I'm like, I shouldn't be listening to this, but man, it's fucking great.
So you know, Mr. Brownstone was the cousin of Captain Jack that Billy Joel famously sung about.
I did not.
I didn't know the family lineage there.
No, I'm just making it up. Jesus Christ.
Just say I did not know that. Wow, that'd be a happy Thanksgiving. Huh? Okay. Well, that's it. So we had some crossover there a little bit with Guns N' Roses and Wiz's kind of somber, melancholy list to crossover with Toph on on you two over there. And but hey, I think it was a pretty eclectic list. We didn't have as much crossover as I thought we would, to be honest with you guys. But do we have any?
I agree a lot more.
I'm gonna go around the horn one by one, and I'll call on you and just give a few honorable mentions that didn't make anyone's list today that we have not spoke about yet, if you'd like. Toph, what did you have any honorable mentions that didn't get brought up today, brother?
I did. Most of my honorable mentions were mainly because they're non-rock albums, but I really, really enjoyed them. And this is probably more indicative of what I was listening to at the time. So Joshua Tree was one of mine. Tom Petty's Full Moon Fever was my honorable mention. I tried to pick a Mellencamp album, but he was so prolific in the 80s that you kind of have to combine all of his into one greatest hits album, and then you've got some really great stuff. Another one of my favorite bands from the 80s, if you combine all their stuff, was English alternative rock band XTC, which is fantastic at the time. That's stuff that sticks to the rock definition a little bit better. No one mentioned AC/DC's Back in Black, which was a really good album.
Yeah, I had that one as well.
I had the Smiths self-titled album, which I think is a great album. I think that was their first one.
And then my
honorable mentions are rounded out with The Police Synchronicity.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, great album.
All very well. A couple of those are my honorables as well. Mark, did you have any honorables you want to give a shout out to, buddy?
I did. And I'm surprised no one picked it. ZZ Top's Eliminator.
It's on my honorables as
well. Fantastic album. Mm-hmm. I also had, I don't know if you're going to consider it a rock album, but it does feature a killer guitar solo from Eddie Van Halen, Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Yeah, it's a great album.
Could be one of the greatest albums of all time.
Yeah, I agree with that. It was the first vinyl record that I bought for my daughter when she got her record player a couple years ago was Thriller.
And to round out my honorable mentions, I also threw in Pink Floyd's Delicate Sounds of Thunder, which was a double live album. One of my favorites from that time period, although not his best album, was Frank Zappa's Baby Snakes, which was actually just recordings from the famous 1977 Halloween shows that he did and used them to release an album years later.
Okay.
And my last one is Queensryche, Operation Mindcrime. This could have been in my top three. I absolutely love this album. It's one of the greatest concept albums, and it's absolutely a rocking album too. I drove across the country one summer just to go see Queensryche play this album live, and it was well worth the trip.
Well, that's awesome, man. Is that the one with Silent Lucidity?
No. This was Operation Mindcrime was a concept album put out that tells a story, and then years later they put out Operation Mindcrime 2.
I got you.
I highly recommend listening to this one.
Electric Boogaloo. Good stuff.
I got you. Okay, Wiz.
You can't get me on Breaking, because if you listen to Poop Culture, you know Breaking is one of my all-time favorite movies.
So. I will start listening today. So,
okay, I'm sorry.
By the way, that's no one's favorite movie, so you're the only one.
I love Breaking. Do you want me to go get the VHS or DVD copy of your choice?
Yeah, let's do
it. Put a background back there. Wiz, did we talk about to you yet about your honorables? I can't remember. No, we didn't. Did
no,
we?
Not yet.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but I did have Violent Femmes mention. The first four songs off of that is just phenomenal. I had David Bowie, Let's Dance. Again, we're going to go, you can make fun of me. And Scary great. Monsters, which squeezed in there in 1980. Police Synchronicity, Dire Straits, Brother in Arms.
Sure.
Yep, great album.
And I think that's it that hasn't been mentioned. I did mention Def Leppard, Pyromania, actually. That was in that early 80s. I really enjoyed that album.
The only ones that didn't get mentioned for me, guys, that I want to just make sure I do mention, in my opinion, probably the second best Stones album, but the first one was in the 70s, but Tattoo You from 1981, Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Sonic Youth, Daydream Nation in 1988.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of like what Wiz said with Jane's Addiction and then what I said with Nirvana. This was right around when everything was kind of changing there in 88 or 89, and Sonic Youth was at the forefront there. Definitely one of the pioneers of alternative music. Bob Seger, I'm a huge fan of, so I put Against the Wind on here. That came out in 1980. He's one of my favorite artists, so I put Against the Wind. Dr. Feelgood by Motley Crue came out in 1989.
Strip Club.
Again, I'm appealing
almost, to... Yeah, I almost put that on my list as well. That, you know, when you talk about 80s rock, and we haven't used this term yet, there was a lot of quote-unquote feel-good music going on at the time.
Yeah,
that was the current trend, and Motley Crue captured that better than any band.
For sure. And again, I'm appealing to all the strippers that might be listening, so
had to make sure. Listen up.
I had to make sure to show them some love. All right, so let's go around the horn here, and I want you guys to tell everybody where to find you. I can't thank you guys enough for being here, taking time out of your day to record this today. And it'll start over on our Patreon site, and then it'll make its way out into the masses. And you guys were all great, and this is a very eclectic top five. We had very little crossover, which I think is awesome. So, Chris, the Toph, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you over there on the Gravity Beer, buddy?
Yes, sir. First of all, Gerald, thank you very much for having me on. This is right up my alley.
Of course.
So I appreciate that. The show is called Gravity Beard. We are hosted on Podbean. You can also find us on any other podcast podcatchers. We also have a show within the show called This Week Today that runs every other week. We're on Twitter at The Gravity Beard. We're actually in between seasons of Blunder Dogs, which is the official IndiePod blooper show. So check that out when it comes back, probably in early May. Come join us and other IndiePod podcast creators in the Underdog podcast community on Facebook. And of course, we're proud members of the PodMix Network.
What I was going to say, though, Toph, is congratulations. I know you just did your 100th episode, right?
Yes, we sure did. A few weeks ago, we did.
Yeah. Congratulations.
We hit. Thank you very much. We hit 100. And actually, if you've never listened to our show, I'm glad you mentioned this, and you just want to say, what is this show all about? Because even I have trouble explaining it to people. Go listen to the 100th. That's a really good representation of what our show sounds like.
Yeah, no. Great show, man. I'm often listening to the Gravity Beer. So good show. Thanks for being here, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
And then from the poop culture, and obviously it's a pop culture show, and they do a lot of fun stuff over there. Mark, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and your compadres?
All right. Well, you can check us out on poopculture.com, where you can check out all of our past catalog and all of the shows in our Poop Culture Extended Universe, the PCEU. We have a roster right now of about 9 shows that we're running with, and check them all out. There's some quality programming there, and then on our show, Poop Culture, we're your home for raw and raunchy, irreverent improv.
I love it, man. Poop Culture, great show. Make sure you guys check them out. That will also be in the show notes, as well as Gravity Beard Wiz. Do you want to give people your home address or anything, or because I know you're not doing anything, so you good?
Yeah, no, I've got a parent-teacher conference at 3 o'clock today for my second grader.
Fair enough.
I'm going to take my wife out for some coffee for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, we're recording this on Valentine's Day, just so everyone knows.
Catch me on those websites as well, so that's where I am.
Awesome, man, but I do really appreciate you being here too, Wiz. I know you got a busy schedule, brother, so tell Allison I said thank you, because I'm sure you had to get permission, so.
I will.
You can just give out your Ashley Madison user profile name.
Yeah, we call
it. One tall Wiz.
One tall Wiz. That's the one I use as well. Okay, that's it, guys. So this has been our bonus episode for 1980s rock albums. I hope you enjoyed it. Future bonus episodes, the last two to round out our 80s series, are going to be the top 5 TV theme songs. And then we are going to do our top 5 teen movies from the 1980s. So those will be a lot of fun as well. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you so much to my panel today. Chris from the Gravity Beard, Mark from Poop Culture, and Wiz from right up the street, who was still friends with me after 30 years. Means a lot. Means a lot. Thanks, guys. I'll be talking to you guys online soon, okay?
Thanks,
Gerald.
Thanks.
You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.